We're reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 14, and we're doing text 34 and 35. This is the chapter where Lord Krishna explains the yoga system to Uddhava. Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We can read text 34 together. Rita avichinam omkaram gantha nadam vishanavat pranino diryatat rata punakstam vishayet saram. Translation. Beginning from the Muladhara chakra, one should move the life air continuously upward like the fibers in the lotus stalk until one reaches the heart, where the sacred syllable Om is situated like the sound of a bell. One should thus continue raising the sacred syllable upward the distance of 12 angulas, and there the Omkar should be joined together with the 15 vibrations produced with Anushvara. Purport. It appears that the yoga system is somewhat technical and difficult to perform. Anusvara refers to a nasal vibration pronounced after the 15 Sanskrit vowels. The complete explanation of this process is extremely complicated and obviously unsuitable for this age. From this description, we can appreciate the sophisticated achievements of those who in former ages practiced mystic meditation. Despite such appreciation, however, we should stick firmly to the simple, foolproof method of the meditation prescribed for the present age. The chanting of Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Text 35. Evam Pranava Samhitam. Raman Eva Samabhaset. Dashakrit Saschi Sadhanam. Nasa arva jitanilaha. Evam pranava samyutam. Vamaneva samadhaset. Dashapit vaschi sadhanam. Nasa arva jitanilaha. Please chant.
Evam pranava samyuktam.
Evam pranava samyuktam.
Prananeva samadhyaset.
Prananeva samadhyaset.
Natsukirvasti savanam.
Natsukirvasti savanam.
Masarabhagitanna.
Masarabhagitanna.
Evam pranava samyuktam.
Evam pranava samyuktam.
Masa
Arvajitanila
Evam Pranava
मांगते
एवं दस प्राणव उपसर्गो ओम संयुक्तम जॉइंड प्राणम द प्राणायाम सिस्टम ऑफ कंट्रोलिंग द बॉडी एयर्स एव इंडीड समभ्यसत वन शुड केयरफुली प्रैक्टिस दशकृत्वः Ten times. Tri Savanam. At sunrise, noon, and sunset. Maasat. 1 month. Arbak. After. Jitta. One will conquer. Anilaha. The life air. Translation. Being fixed in the Omkar, one should carefully practice the pranayama system 10 times at each sunrise, moon and sunset. Thus, after 1 month, one will have conquered the life air. So, how many takers do we have for the system? Anybody? Actually, I don't think anyone has a clue in Kali Yuga what the system is. I mean, I don't know where to find my air in my body. I only go to my mouth, and that's, you know. So, this is has not been recommended. In this age, due to the nature of Kali Yuga, we're bombarded by so many distractions. There's a race to go somewhere. I don't know where. I think we heard hearing yesterday that we're all moving in a direction, but especially in the West, we're moving at breakneck speed, as Prabhupada says, and we don't know where we're going. So the distractions to the mind. Are there, what less all the material modes of nature which are so heavy on everyone. So this, I guess it's part of the Ashtanga Yoga system, sounds like a big challenge. I don't think they even, I don't know of any yoga system that teaches it these days. Maybe some, but it's not a popular item in this age. It would take hundreds of years of practice. Well, here actually you can conquer this one thing of the air in 1 month. I don't know how long it takes to do one pranayama, but you're supposed to do it, 30 times a day? Might take your whole day, I would have a feeling. So this yoga is not the yoga of this day and age. The advertising for the yoga in this age is to better your health, which is a good thing. And many devotees partake in the yoga system for their bodily health, keep the body and soul together. And also to get a slim waistline and to maybe find a partner and whatever else in these yoga classes. So it's a different type of yoga. But we really should have respect for those who do want to submit themselves to a yoga system where they can actually get some peace of mind. They can actually get a grip on these senses, which are raging mad horses. And there's also the control of the mind. And that is something that is in high demand these days. I'm sure you'll hear from Vaisheshika when he comes that his way he distributes his books is that, have you heard of stress? And everyone goes, of course I've heard of stress. So everyone wants this peace of mind. They don't want to be agitated all the time. And so this is a good way to advertise the yoga system, is that if you really stick to this process, even just the exercise and everything, you can begin to slow down and actually start to go a little inward and ultimately, hopefully, understand that there is a higher type of yoga. This book, Spiritual Yoga, just the title is so attractive. Whenever you have it on the book's stand, they always go, oh, I really want that one. Because they understand that the East had something in this yoga system, that it actually has some mystic vibration to it, that there's something more than just the exercises in the mind. There's actually a meditation part of it. And this is something that we hope to give to them, especially when these young young kirtan groups. I think this weekend they went to a big Zen fest down in Orlando and chanted to actually try to induce this meditative kirtan, this chanting, to the generation that are attracted to yoga. So we see that this is having a great effect to actually to present this kirtan, this chanting of the holy name, which is so attractive. Like you hear, people are coming from all over just to come to this kirtan mela, being booked solid. So this is something that we can do and we can spread to others, along with the philosophy. Unfortunately, most of the yoga classes that you go to in the West anyway don't really explain the philosophy of yoga, how you can actually become absorbed and meditate on God, and that you're not really God. So this is the unknown spiritual yoga. But the real yogis, Prabhupada said there are very few of these mystic yogis hanging around. Has anyone been to the Kumbh Mela? Yeah, I went in 1980, and we were supposed to, it would be our first big distribution of prasadam there, and we get there, and we don't even have a rolling pin. We're supposed to distribute puris, and we were using a glass or something. It was pretty cool in those days. But I was, I got a lot of respect for yogis when I went there. There were some, unique individual yogis, and some of them, Papa has said that the only way they could have gotten there is by mystic travel, because they live in the Himalayas, and they're very old. Yadavar was there at that time, and he was taking himself out to an outer camp to photograph a 300-year-old yogi who had actually got himself to the festival, but he was staying very far apart. I wish he was here, because I never found out if he got pictures of him. But I saw some, one upside down chanting japa with his head buried in the ground, and Dina Bond was swimming out. You know that how the American devotees just love to swim in those, the torrents of the Ganga and everything. And he tried to get to some point out there and ended up to be the top of the head of a yogi who was meditating under the water somehow or other. So this was going on. Plus all the Shivites, just dressed in ashes and things like that. It's not like the rainbow gathering that you go to here where everyone, leaves their computer at home and then they dress up in their, rip their jeans before they go there so they look like they're kind of a loftier or something, and they put on their weird hat and they go and they, transcendentalist of some sort, and then they go back to their computer jobs after the weekend's over. It's not like that at all. These are, some very powerful yogis, which there are very, very few, if any, left. If some of them actually are 300 years old, that means it's a long time meditating and sitting on ice. I mean, that much ice on that roof was enough for me. I had my daughters got tickets to go to Iceland in the middle of winter, and I said, you'd have to pay me to go be in freezing cold weather for 3 weeks. No, thanks. But these yogis actually would, be in the Himalayas on the ice and perform all these austerities. Austerities is not a popular word, in this age. What little austerity we do is plenty. But this was, common a long time ago. They didn't have all the distractions and so many other things to do, so they would choose to meditate and advance themselves. And at these Kumbh Melas, the one thing that was the most wonderful was that when we would take the kirtan party out, you would see all the little trishukas, or what are they called? The little, staffs of the Shivites, they would all be bouncing up and down, and that they would all come out and dance and chant. And this was something that all the yogis would loved, is the Harinam party going through. So we can see that it is most powerful, is this holy name, that it can attract even these yogis from their so-called meditation. But I did learn a lot of respect, and it says here that we should respect these people. Srila Prabhupada said there's really no question of us doing that. Even, you know, we couldn't even do the 64 round or the 32 round. We're down at 16 now. So this is a challenge for us. But we find that the potency of this Hare Krishna mantra has allowed us to actually withdraw our senses, like yogis, withdraw our senses from all this glitter of sense enjoyment, sense gratification. And we've gotten a higher taste that helps us to really have that advertised stressless life. I mean, we might have some spiritual anxiety of, oh, what do I put on the DVDs today, or how do I make this preparation for the Lord, or something like that, or this Holy Name Festival, so many anxieties. But for us, that's a pleasure. That's a pleasure. But the material stress is definitely lessened. And it's very practical. We don't have to change our dress. We don't have to rub ourselves with ashes and sit there with a chain around our waist. We can just, you know, chant Hare Krishna and go about our business, whatever business we have to do to exist here a little longer in these material bodies. Actually, some people complain, this Hare Krishna is too easy. You know, you got your houses, you got your cars, and you have jobs, and yeah, you sing and dance, and it's a kitchen religion, you're always eating, and you know, always having parties and festivals. My mother would always complain, you can't come because of festival. You had a festival last week, and so many festivals all the time, you know. So, it's the greatest yoga, and it's confirmed by Krishna himself. He has the last say in it. He says, of all the yogis, the one who is surrendered to me, who is worshiping me with everything, he's most dear, and this, he's the highest of all yogis. So that's the opinion that we stick to. But it's also true that we're not, you know, in samadhi all the time. You don't find us in our homes all day just, you know, blissed out in meditation, not doing anything, or we're not hearing Krishna's flute at every second. But we're very busy in Krishna's business. And that's a success. Instead of all about me, it's all about Krishna. And this is a meditation that will purify our heart. And it comes from the purification of the chanting of the holy name and our festivals and our prasadam and everything. This is the whole process. So Krishna is the means and the end of this yoga process. We do have some challenges in Krishna consciousness. I don't know if any of you, how many of you have chanted 64 rounds a day at one time or another? It's a challenge. You know, your mind is really barking at you a lot of the day, you know, and your body is complaining and so many things. So we find that, you know, even the fasting on different holidays, that's also a little bit of a challenge. So there are some austerities, of course, the four rules and regulations, that's there. But the satisfaction, the benefit of having that soul do what it's supposed to do, that's the greatest satisfaction. We know we're doing the best thing. There's not anything else we could do better in this lifetime, is to engage our body and soul in this bhakti process, in this yoga process. So that's the satisfaction that I have, is that I know I'm doing the right thing, even though I'm not in samadhi, I'm not hearing Krishna's flute, but I just know I'm doing the best thing. And at some point, we'll get the mercy. And we are getting the mercy. Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda here, they've just delivered this process to us. How much easier can we get? How much more handicap can we have in this age of Kali Yuga? Last week at this time, we were getting ready, we went to a religious diversity day at Santa Fe Community College. And actually, I had a lot of respect. There were more religions set up there than ever before, which is a good sign that there's actually, you know, that spiritual surge again, you know. And there were actually new religions that I never heard of before. Something about family, something about the family. And then there's some people there that were always there every year, the Quakers, who are also a lot about family. They don't really mention God much in their religion. I talk to them. And doing good, things like that, and living simply. And then there was a, right next to me, where I was standing, the Ekankar people were there. And many of the things that they were saying were right on. You know, you're not your body. You need to, you know, absorb yourself in spiritual. You need to chant. And I go, well, really? You need to chant. And so I went over and I actually talked to them. And it kind of reminds me of the reading that we just had by Mukhya about, you know, concocting, making up new things. Anyway, they chant this who, H-U. What? Yeah, yeah. And it's a vibration of the universe. That's what it is. So they're getting somewhere, but I'm not sure where. Yeah, yeah. They definitely, you know, consider it very, very strong.
Did you say it was a Sanskrit word? They also
said. No, they told me it was a Sanskrit word. Any Sanskrit scholars here have ever heard of who? Who? I don't know. Anyway, I thought it might be Chinese. So we said maybe it's Chinese. No, it's Sanskrit. I go, Anyway, so we kind of stick to our own. There was one very nice, we got greeted. We got greeted by the Mormons. Now, we love the Mormons, you know. And they came running up and said, do you know Adi Karta? I love that guy. Three times they said, Adi Karta, I love him. He's wonderful, you know. And they met him at the University of North Florida. So this is the yogi. Adi Karta is a yogi. He's changing the hearts of these people, you know. And he said, yeah. And he told me, I sat down and I learned your mantra and I chanted it. And he'd always bring us cookies. So this is the power of our principles of just being humble and going out and asking everyone to please chant Hare Krishna. It can change your life. I mean, these guys were fired up about Krishna consciousness. They, can we help you with carrier stuff? And, oh, yeah, Adi Karta, I love him. And then someone else, some other girl from somewhere else said, yeah, I know him, he's great. So, and we have like two yogis right here that live in a van and go all over preaching and changing everyone's heart. They go all over to remote places like Nebraska and places I've never been to or ever heard of hardly, you know, and they're actually changing people's hearts. So this is real yoga, and it's having a great effect on everyone. So we can see that many religions are there, and we respect them. One girl came up from, she was with a nun that had the real habit and the whole dress, which you don't see very often anymore. And she was real simple, real nice, peaceful girl, and I encouraged her in her path. I don't know if she'll make it or not. It's pretty austere. But anyway, we should respect, and it's nice to go to these diversity days and see that that there is an interest in advancing in spiritual life and getting control of our senses, even though in this it's very, very difficult. We've heard of here of this yogic feat, this mystic power of actually becoming very transcendental, and this is the ultimate goal of yoga, is to transcend all these different anxieties and modes, and to return back to our higher spiritual consciousness, which is full of pleasure. But we get other benefits, like many people say, yeah, you chant and you get some peace of mind, but we get yogic powers. We actually can say no. You know, they have these big billboards, just say no. Because there's so many yeses these days. Yes, abortion, yes, gay rights, yes, marijuana, yes, everything. But we can actually say, no, we don't want to go there. Because we have some control, we have the higher knowledge that we don't want to go that direction. And we can refrain from these illicit activities, which is very difficult for most people to do. At some point in their life, they break down and they can't withdraw. So we are very fortunate that we're only addicted to Krishna and nothing else. So we also get the quality of humility, because we're depending on Krishna all the time. When we're chanting our japa, we're praying, please, please accept me, you know. And we're remembering in crises, we have the ability to actually immediately remember, this is Krishna's mercy, I deserve worse. So this is a great power that we have, because we're all going to be in some kind of misery at some point, especially at the time of death. But we have that ability to transcend, which is very, very powerful. And also, the greatest thing is that we can learn to be satisfied. And no one in this material world is really satisfied with their lives. But we can be satisfied just living and serving God in whatever little teeny insignificant way we can. And just getting to come and hear about Krishna and to participate in chanting and spreading his glories gives the greatest satisfaction. To actually go out and to give this is the greatest satisfaction. And that was one thing that was very much in common when I talked to this girl that wanted to become a nun. And I said, actually, the greatest thing is for me to stand here and talk to people about God. And she goes, you don't even know that's right. That's my greatest satisfaction too, is to just to spread this. So I think it's because God is very happy that he gives us such a nice taste that we take it to others. So these are some very wonderful attributes that we get from this bhakti yoga. And to top it all off, we get, you know, to revive our relationship with Krishna. We get to stand here and actually begin to become closer and closer to him, become attracted to him, and ultimately to have the winning ticket to get to go back to God, to go back to Krishna and not have to come back here again. That was one thing that most people I talked to agreed with, is that they want out. They don't want to have to come back again. But most of them aren't willing to accept the authorities, but it's so easy for us because this is so authoritative. We're hearing about this yoga system. This came from Krishna, the yoga system. We can have all the details right here of how to do it. We don't have to go anywhere else. It gives us all knowledge, both material and spiritual. So, of course, Srila Prabhupada is the greatest of all yogis because he's turned coal. He's washed coal. He's washed some of our hearts and has allowed us to become a little bit anxious to serve Krishna in this lifetime. So he is definitely the greatest yogi. He's able to help us with our nasty habits, to get rid of them and to clean up our business. So we are very thankful for his instructions. I think to become a yoga instructor in this day and age, I know Ram, he's a yoga instructor, and he was saying that he couldn't be here for the festival because he was at more instructions. I think you need at least 150 hours of training to be a yoga coach or something like that. And I was thinking that to do this kind of yoga, to learn that and to do it, probably hundreds of years, not just hours, to become successful on this path. And not everyone is successful. Even after so many attempts, they might fall down. So how easy for us, you know, we're just given this mantra for free, and we're given a time to, we can take it up and become very serious and realize that our chanting of japa and this kirtan and hearing and chanting should be taken very seriously, and that we should become perfect in it. As perfect as we can with the spiritual master's mercy, because this will give us the power to finish up our business. So we've heard of many yogis in the scriptures. I can name a few. I'm sure you've got a long list too. And they had some very, very wonderful powers that were amazing when you hear about them. There's Atrimuni, Maitreya, of course, Vyasadeva, and Vishwamitra, and then Durvasa, he had his challenges. Marichi, Kapila, Subari Muni, Bhishma Dev also, Parvat Muni and Narada Muni, they were nephews. They traveled a lot together. Pulastya Muni, so many rishis living in the forest and living in ashrams. Many of these actually were married and had many wives, some of them from Prajapatis, but they had some great power from their austerities. And we have respect for all of them and realize that we'll never be at that level as far as the yoga system is concerned, but In this one lifetime, we should try to work on our own challenges in Krishna consciousness and try to take a little bit more seriously that we have a very short time. I mean, I'm getting a little concerned. I've only got, I don't know how many years left or how many breaths left. And we've got a lot of work to do to actually perfect this bhakti yoga, to actually cleanse our heart. Because this is the, as we say many times in preaching, this is the yoga of the heart. And no one really likes to have to do a maha cleanup on anything that's really dirty. And that's what it's like. We have to go very deep in with our hearts and find all the dirt that's been keeping us here for so many lifetimes. I mean, there must be some really, dirt that's really stuck on there that keeps us having to come back again. So this yoga process means we have to every day go a little deeper, scratch a little harder to get that dust off. And so this is not that easy, but we can if we're determined. It can be very overwhelming at times when we see all of a sudden some dirt just pop up out of nowhere. We don't know where it is. We're in the process, but all of a sudden this nasty desire comes. I have a lot of realizations pulling weeds around here. And 2 days ago, I had a crew, and we were attacking the blueberry patch. There's a grass, it's called, I had Jason look it up, it's on his little phone. It's called Thompson grass or Johnson grass. And it looks kind of like corn stalks almost, but it just invades, and it's all invaded our blueberry patch. I pulled it out twice this summer, but it's worse. Actually, he said, it says here that if you fluff up the thing, and then they like it better. So what you're doing is actually helping them. I go, oh, great. It's like watering the weeds of while you're chanting, watering all the offenses that are going through your mind. But I was thinking, we were trying to actually pull them out, and they just go. And I was saying to them, this is like in our heart. We just keep finding more and more roots. More roots are all hooked together, and they're all just binding us here. And it's like you're never going to get rid of them. Of course, they advised that Monsanto poison. But we are advised here to just chant the holy name. It's more powerful than that. And it only does good for the universe. We see that more people are attracted to yoga and vegetarianism and everything because of the holy name. The holy name is being spread all over. And we can hope that in the future that many of the nasty desires that are there within everyone's heart will go away and that we can see a little bit of what Prabhupada wanted done, and that is to get more peace in the world and to be able to bring more people back to Krishna. It's a tall order, but Prabhupada, greatest yogi, look what he's done. So we should take it seriously and take it up, improve our own chanting, become real meditative in our chanting, and pray for the strength to erase all those material desires that keep us from Krishna lifetime after lifetime. So anyone have any questions or additions? Yes?
The third canto, 28th chapter, from 4 to 32, Srila Prabhupada gave a very nice explanation how Lord Krishna is very merciful, why he introduced yoga. And Kapil Dev is expressing this, that we are looking for unity and harmony, and between the nature and the physical body, Hatha Yoga was introduced. And to harmonize between the physical body and the subtle body or mind, the Ashtanga Yoga headed by Pranayama was introduced. And it was mercy that Krishna wanted gradually progress. And then from the subtle body to the Atma, the Jnana Yoga was introduced. And that's how progression takes place. And then from the Atma to Paramatma, Dhyana Yoga was introduced. Then they become fearless, become literally come to Brahmabhuta platform. Then from Paramatma to Bhagavan, when the love develops, the Bhakti Yoga was introduced. So it was a gradual progression why Krishna introduced that. And in the Purport, Prabhupada writes, those who taken shelter of Guru and perform devotional service every day, engage in the temple. All these yogas are already introduced. When they are chanting, dancing, the pranayama is already there. And this is unknown, he says, this is unknown to others. And actually we do all this, we harmonize, that's why devotees are peaceful. Because we need the harmony between nature to physical body, to subtle body, to the soul, to Krishna, like that. So that's why Bhakti Yoga Hare Krishna philosophy and the program that we do is the most important in this age right now.
Nice package deal.
Yeah.
Anybody else? Okay, we can go about our daily meditation and service to Krishna, Hare Krishna.